This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Alice Bryant, and Dan Novak. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter and his wife Rosalynn celebrate the 75th anniversary of their wedding today. The Carters were married in 1946, 1 year after they met. At the time, the future president was a student at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. He was home in Plains, Georgia, for a visit when his sister set him up with Eleanor Rosalynn Smith for a date. Carter won the presidential vote in 1976 and served as the country's 39th president for one term. He was defeated by Ronald Reagan in the 1980 election. Carter is 96 years old, and his wife is 93. At 96, Carter has lived the longest of any of America's 45 presidents. Carter has often said the greatest decision he ever made was asking Rosalynn to marry him. He said it does not compare to being commander-in-chief or being in charge of a nuclear submarine during his time in the Navy. The Carters discussed what keeps them together after so many years. "It's a full partnership," the former president said. "Every day," he said, "the two make sure they communicate and fix any problems that come up before they go to bed. We don't go to sleep with some remaining differences between us." Jimmy and Rosalynn also keep a long-time tradition alive each day, reading the Bible out loud together each night, even if they are apart. Even at their age, the two still try to find activities to do together. Rosalynn spoke about attempting to find common interests. But at the same time, Rosalynn said, they each need some time alone. "That's really important," she said. Over 40 years ago, Rosalynn Carter established some of the traditions carried on by future first ladies. She set up her own office in the White House. She worked on making laws for health care and mental health. She continued doing that work as the pair moved back into private life, working at the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia, after Jimmy's 4 years as president. In recent years, some well-known American couples announced breakups. These include Amazon chief Jeff Bezos and his wife Mackenzie, as well as Microsoft founder Bill Gates and his wife Melinda. So it seems correct for the Carters to celebrate staying together so long. The couple admitted, however, that they experienced some rough spots. In 1953, when Carter was in his Navy career, his father died. he decided his family would move back to Georgia and start working in agriculture. However, he did not discuss this plan with his wife. Thinking back on it, Carter said he made a mistake. His wife was not happy with the move. Now, he said, he cannot imagine not discussing a major life change with his wife. The couple said getting through that difficult time was important for their relationship. It turned out that Jimmy needed help from Rosalind because she knew more about farming than he did. "He would take my advice about things," she said. Later, Jimmy decided to get into politics without discussing the choice with Rosalind. But as it turned out, she was fine with that decision. "I had the best time," she said, speaking about the campaign process. In the years after their time in the White House, the Carters continued to work to support equal rights. The former president criticized the part of Christianity that he follows, Southern Baptism, during an event in 2006. He said the denomination was too rigid and prevented women from being equal partners in marriage. The Carters also want the church to recognize same-sex marriage. He said the church is evolving on that issue. The couple is having an anniversary party later this week in Plains. Even after their years holding important dinners at the White House, they are still not completely at ease at big parties. "We have too many people invited," Rosalind Carter said of the planned event. I'm Dan Friedel.
Members of Chile's constitutional delegation have chosen a woman from the indigenous Mapuche people to lead efforts to create the new constitution. The choice marks a big turning point for a people that were ignored during the making of the country's present constitution. The Mapuche are the largest group of indigenous people in Chile. Elisa Loncon is a political independent, a university professor, and an activist for Mapuche educational and language rights. She was chosen by 96 of the 155 men and women, including 17 indigenous people, that make up the new constitutional body. The group will replace Chile's current constitution, which was approved under the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. Loncon was celebrated by members of the group after accepting the position on Sunday. She said, "I salute the people of Chile from the north to Patagonia, from the sea to the mountains, to the islands, all those who are watching us today." Loncon added that she was thankful for the support of coalitions that placed their trust and their dreams in the hands of the Mapuche nation. "They voted for a Mapuche person, a woman, to change the history of this country," she said. Electing Loncon represented a high point in a day that included a suspension of the delegates' swearing-in ceremony. The delay happened after protests took place outside and inside Santiago's former Congress building, where the event was being held. During Loncon's election, demonstrators from all political sides demanded that police not be involved in the ceremony. The protesters were met by heavily armed police at blockades. As demands came from delegates for the Special Forces Police to leave, the head electoral court official agreed to suspend the event until midday. The incident demonstrated the intense issues for creating a new constitution as the country faces deep divisions. In 2019, there were massive protests over inequality that worsened after police responded with violence. The constitutional body was chosen by a popular vote in May and is made up mainly of independent and leftist candidates. Some candidates had roots in the protest movement. A smaller share of more conservative candidates received backing from the current center-right government. The delegates have promised to work on issues including water and property rights, central bank independence, and labor policies. This has led to worry among business investors about possible big changes to the free market system for the world's top copper producer. Before the ceremony began, Aymara and Mapuche delegates held spiritual ceremonies in the streets that included song and dance. Not recognized in the current constitution, these indigenous communities are hoping the new document will include cultural, political, and social rights. The delegation has up to a year to agree to a common rule book, establish committees, and write a new document. I'm Alice Bryant.
Over the past few months in the United States, the expression critical race theory, or CRT, has appeared in state houses and political gatherings from almost nowhere. CRT has become an important cause for conservatives. Many Republican-controlled states have passed legislation restricting how history and race can be taught in public schools. For some, critical race theory is a way of understanding how race has shaped American society and public policy. For others, CRT creates division and conflict between white people and minorities. But even those who criticize critical race theory have a hard time defining what it is. So, what exactly is it?
Critical race theory is a way of thinking about America's history through race. It argues that racism is more than just individual prejudices and discrimination. CRT centers on the idea that racism is systemic in the country's institutions. The theory also argues that the country's institutions work to keep white people as the most powerful group. University professors and others in academia developed CRT during the 1970s and 1980s in response to what they viewed as a lack of racial progress. The creators of the theory argue that the U.S. was founded on stolen land and labor through the colonization of native land and slavery. Supporters of the theory also believe race is not biological, but culturally invented. Kimberly Crenshaw is the head of the African American Policy Forum and one of the earliest supporters of CRT. At first, the theory was simply about telling a more complete story of who we are.
There is little evidence that critical race theory is being taught to public school students. But some ideas relating to the theory are being taught. Tassie Zahner is an advanced placement, or AP, American history teacher in Montgomery County, Maryland. AP is a nationwide program that provides high school students with college-level classes. She said it would be very hard to teach her class without using some CRT concepts, like America's History of Racism. In order to teach an AP U.S. history class correctly, you have to talk about those things, she said. You can't prepare students if you're not teaching the truth about U.S. history. But some parents and conservative lawmakers see some uses of the theory as problematic. In Greenwich, Connecticut, some middle school students were given a white bias survey, which angered some parents. The Wake County Public School System in North Carolina organized a meeting for teachers on critical race theory, angering state Republican lawmakers. Lisa Luton is a spokeswoman for the Wake County School System. North Carolina is one of the 26 states that have proposed laws that restrict critical race theory or limit how teachers can discuss racism or sexism, says the publication Education Week. Critical race theory is not something we teach to students, Luton said. It's more of a theory in academia about race that adults use to discuss their environment.
Many conservatives and Republicans say CRT is an effort to rewrite American history. They argue CRT tells white people that they are naturally racist and should feel guilty because of their privileges. But the term critical race theory has recently been used as a general description for racial ideas that conservatives dislike. These include white privilege, systemic inequality, and inherent bias. Out of the 26 states that have considered legislation, 8 have banned or limited the teaching of CRT and similar ideas. The bans, all from Republican-led states, largely describe what can be taught inside the classroom. While legislation in some states mentions critical race theory by name, others do not. Many are unclear about what should or should not be taught. Other states have banned teaching the New York Times's The 1619 Project. Released in 2019, The 1619 Project aimed to tell a story of American history with slavery at the center of the country's founding. The banning of CRT ideas has extended to other countries as well. In late June, Australia's Senate voted to remove CRT from the national school system. The conversation reported that some politicians and media groups were concerned that Australia's schools were teaching too much about the oppression, discrimination, and struggles of Indigenous Australians.
Teachers' groups, educators, and social studies organizations worry the laws will make students get an untrue picture of American history. They say it is very damaging for students to think that racism, discrimination, and past injustices do not affect the country today. Education Week argues it will be difficult to enforce laws that place limits on what happens inside individual classrooms. But some educators fear that the laws could scare teachers into changing what and how they teach about race. Zahner said lawmakers and adults pass these kinds of laws because they underestimate the ability of young people to think critically. She said students do not need to depend on the analysis of historians and social scientists to get an understanding. Often, they can read documents or other information from the past and learn for themselves. Zahner added that refusing to permit children to study CRT means you're taking away both the knowledge and their ability to analyze things. I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was related to an earlier president with the same last name, Theodore Roosevelt. Many Americans call Franklin Roosevelt by the first letter of each word in his full name, FDR. When FDR took office, the United States was in a severe economic depression. The previous president, Herbert Hoover, had tried to improve the economy, but his efforts had failed. FDR defeated Hoover in the election of 1932. He won, in part, by promising what he called a New Deal for Americans. Voters did not know what FDR's New Deal meant exactly, but many liked his message of hope. Voters also did not know how much FDR would change the country. He remained in office for 12 years, the longest of any U.S. president, and led the country through the Great Depression and most of World War II. Along the way, he changed the way government affected Americans' lives and the job of the U.S. president. Franklin Roosevelt was born on a large estate in New York, about 140 kilometers outside New York City. He was the only child of wealthy parents. His mother and father made sure he had an excellent education. As a young man, he attended a private high school and then Harvard College in Massachusetts. He also studied law at Columbia University in New York. Young FDR was not an excellent student, however. He was interested in many things outside the classroom, including politics and girls. Two of FDR's interests came together in a young woman named Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, who went by the name Eleanor. She was the niece of a politician FDR greatly respected, President Theodore Roosevelt. On the day when Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt were married, Theodore Roosevelt attended the ceremony. In fact, he walked with his niece in front of the guests to her future husband. Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt went on to have 6 children, although one died as a baby. While Eleanor Roosevelt raised the children, Franklin Roosevelt directed his attention to politics. He left a job in a law office to serve in the New York State Senate. In time, he was offered a job in the federal government as an assistant secretary of the Navy. FDR enjoyed the job, but he continued seeking other political positions. He tried unsuccessfully for a seat in the U.S. Senate, but did get nominated by the Democratic Party to be its vice presidential candidate in 1920. Although he and his partner lost the race, FDR seemed like he was in a good position for major political success. But then, something unexpected happened. When he was 39 years old, FDR suffered major health problems. One day he started to feel a pain in his back. The following day, his legs grew tired. Then his skin became sensitive. By the end of the week, both his legs were paralyzed. He could not move from the waist down. He remained paralyzed for the rest of his life. The next years were difficult for the Roosevelts. Eleanor and the children helped care for FDR, and he worked hard to recover some of his strength and physical abilities, especially by exercising. While he remained hopeful about his condition, FDR worried about his political career. He did not think the public would accept a leader who could not even walk by himself. So he took several measures. He created a small wheelchair that would not get too much attention. It was made from a dining room chair, with wheels instead of legs. He refused to let photographers take pictures of him being carried or struggling to move, and he found a way to appear as if he were walking. He used a cane or the arm of a partner to balance, and then he swung his hips to make his legs move forward. Using this method, FDR walked to the stage at the 1924 Democratic National Convention. He used the event to nominate the governor of New York for president. That man's bid did not succeed, but FDR showed himself to still be an able politician. 4 years later, FDR himself was elected governor of New York. He held the position in the early years of the country's economic crisis. In 1932, FDR was a candidate for president. He took the unusual step of appearing in person at the Democratic Convention to accept his party's nomination. His campaign was such a success that the Democrats took not only the White House, but majorities in both the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. The strength of the Democratic Party in Congress would help FDR become one of the most powerful presidents the country had ever seen. Next week, we will continue our story of FDR and his presidency. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.